Good morning. Welcome to our last session here at our ASA conference. This is our second one that's labeled engineering, and this one out on the title of appropriate technology that applies to about one and a half or two of these three papers. My name is Bill Jordan. Again, I'm from Baylor University. I'm the moderator, and I'm also the second speaker. So the first speaker is Leonard Bond from Iowa State University. He's going to talk about quality, reliability, safety, and economics, the role of non-destructive evaluation for energy systems in creation, care, and sustainability. Leonard.
Thank you. Good morning. I think I've probably got one of the longer titles, and we hope that the technology...
Why is that keeping going on and off?
All right. Let's see where we get on. There's been a lot of talk during this weekend about world energy consumption. There's been one of our speakers yesterday made the slightly contentious comment about population being an issue, but if and was brave in saying so. But if we're going to seriously give sustainable development, we're going to have to look at how much energy we're using. We're clearly going to have to look at how much greenhouse gases we're generating. And this was from a thing called the Pickens Plan. You've got there a world average of per capita total energy consumption in one rather a large number, 10 to the 8 BTUs per person. We, as the US, are somewhat above the global average. So we want a lifestyle, we have a lifestyle that's very dependent upon energy, not least transportation. There's lots of ways on different examples of energy systems, and these were just some pictures that we put. This computer is doing something strange. All right, we'll have to see how this one gets on. We're not really using the right computer. There were some IT issues. So anyway, some examples of some energy systems. People have been talking about alternative energy, geothermal, wind, some waves, solar. And we've still got the traditional energy sources, the stuff that comes out of the Gulf and other places. And then you've got nuclear and some other baseload technologies. What is non-destructive evaluation, NDE? NDE, if you look it up on the web, you will actually find near-death experience, which could be a topic for... That's interesting. Something strange is happening on this computer.
You want to copy yours onto this one? This one's working now.
It's trying to connect to something, so let's just turn it up, turn that off. Just a second here.
Well, why don't you copy onto here? This one is working.
All right.
Sorry about that. Okay. Now we've got a password. We just need to change input. Let me change it.
Which is it? Is this? Is F my disk?
I don't know.
There you go.
Oh, I see. I haven't undone. Take mine. Okay. Yeah, just copy it or run it off a USB. Doesn't matter.
All right. Okay. Hopefully.
Okay.
We're now back on the. Can that go away?
Yeah.
All right. All right. What is NDE? It's not the near-death experience. Most of us are familiar with medical from the point of non-destructive evaluation. That is one of the grandchildren. If I don't leave that little white cube there, one of my stepdaughters gets very upset because that covers her social security number. As engineers, although I'm really a physicist, we use a variety of technologies. We use ultrasound, radiography, thermography, electromagnetics, optical, to probe the interior structure. And the goal is to ensure quality, reliability, and service, and to retire things before they fail. It's a little different from the NDE for people, where we try and sort of keep the expiration date as far in the future as we possibly can. But always, for all people, there is an expiration date. For some engineering systems, they last quite a long time. In terms of current trends for traditional non-destructive testing, non-destructive evaluation, aka, if this guy, by the way, was hanging on the side of a refinery back in India, he was having possibly a near-death experience, because if his ropes went, he would end up on the ground some 100 or something feet below. You have a guy with a red hat and a thing called an ultrasonic transducer, and he's actually measuring the thickness of that pipe. Why does he care about the thickness of the pipe in the refinery? Because if the refinery has a bad day, it, in the US, it will cost you $30, $50, or more million from the simple failure of the piece of pipe in the refinery, as well as potentially taking out people and putting some toxic gases out. So from a traditional NDE with traditional energy sources, it's rather critical. It's a major component of trying to operate high technology energy facilities. It's also absolutely critical to operating nuclear power and almost all high technology. We're moving towards robotic systems. We're also trying to move towards SHM, what the heck's SHM? Structural health monitoring, as opposed to people health monitoring. We want to do structural health monitoring, just as you can do preventive medicine now and even get your insurance company to cover some of the preventive medicine tests. You're actually now trying to do that for your engineering systems. And we want to have technology which can be embedded in the system and basically, all right, your Fitbit is not quite embedded in you to count steps, but you're trying to have something that you can put on the outside of your engineering system and provide you with real data that you can evolve and evaluate. Why do we care about engineering systems and NDE? This is an old example. It comes from Iowa, where I've been for about 5 years. This focused people's minds on aerospace safety. It was tragic, but half the people got off that plane in one piece. All right, about half the people were killed. And there are videos on the web which actually show the plane cartwheeling off the runway. They did an amazing job of landing and having lost all hydraulics. But the bottom left-hand corner there shows one of the engine turbine discs. That was found in a cornfield in Iowa. It had come out of the engine. You do not want an engine to deconstruct itself in flight. It gives you a really bad day. And that, I can make you join the Nervous Flyers Club. I'm all, a professor of aerospace engineering as well as other things. But so aerospace systems is where we've looked, and energy is the second one. But things like that will chew their way out of the engine. If it goes towards the passenger cabin, it really does give everybody a bad day. But the point here is there was a defect that was undetected at the time of manufacture, and that was responsible for the crash. The Aloha flight, 243 near Maui, the top of the plane came off. One of the stewardesses tragically was sucked out. That was an aging aircraft. It's not an energy system, but it's somewhat spectacular. Regrettably, the aerospace examples tend to be something that people can rapidly understand. But literally, the top of that plane deconstructed itself in flight. And that was 1988. There was technology developed at the center that I now manage, looking at ways to inspect the planes. How did the US solve with this problem of aging aircraft? The defense community, B-52s, are still flying. They are being flown by the grandchildren of the people who were originally flying them. We manage them, we reconstruct them, we repair them. The civilian US fleet, Delta, United, etc., they solved that problem very easily. They bought new planes and they gave the old planes at a sale, knockdown sale price to third world countries. So from our civilian fleet, we got away from the aging aircraft problem, but it didn't resolve the NDE problem. The defense community has been much more interested in non-destructive evaluation, structural health monitoring. This is one particular example. Helicopters fire these little red hot sausages at the ground. You may have seen them on the news. They can be quite spectacular and they give the guys on the ground a bad day. This particular one, we had a couple of million motors, little rocket motors in storage. there was a problem with them, we needed to inspect them. We actually saved the country about $2 billion. So the reason for that illustration is NDE can actually save money, and even in Washington, D.C., $2 billion is real money. At the moment, anyway. So in terms of managing the life cycle of systems, NDE, non-destructive evaluation, is critical. Non-destructive evaluation for a human system is also critical if we're going to actually maximize our life of operation. We need to look at retirement for cause for engineering systems. How you retire people is a different issue. But what we're interested in is not detecting the smallest possible flaw, but the largest flaw that's going to be missed, because things will basically fail. There was an earlier program there with actually the F-100 engine, which back in 87 saved about $1 billion. So that was just a turbine disk solution for the Air Force. But NDE is something that ties into material science. We have some material scientists at this meeting. There are fewer engineers, or seem to be, but there are material scientists. So where does it all come from, and what does it talk about? The sort of world I live in is the measurements world. We try and measure material properties. We try and predict material properties and structural performance. You can relate that back to a process signature, and you can relate that to service life. It is one of the most important topics from our perspective that most people have never had a course in. And yet, if they become engineers in industry, it becomes really important. So what is this motivation for NDE, structural health monitoring, and energy systems? You may have noticed there are a few wind turbines that are down on the mesa, not too far from here. In the Midwest, we've got an awful lot of wind turbines. People are sticking solar panels all over the place around here. If you're going to invest in solar panels, you want them to last. All right, you've got some nasty toxic chemicals, which California doesn't want you to have. At least in manufacturing, and you've got wind turbines. If you've got an engineering system, the pipe at the top there, local damage can usually be detected. If it fails, you see it. Stuff comes out. There are NDE methods, however, that are difficult to inspect. You've looked at a wind turbine. The tower is a couple of hundred feet high. You've got blades that may be 100 feet long. It's somewhat challenging to inspect them. We want to know more about global damage, its quantification, and we want some automatic methods. And this applies to everything that's big and expensive. This country is very good at new ideas. We are really bad at managing infrastructure. In spite of what the current administration has said, our infrastructure is aging. We need to spend trillions of dollars to keep it operational. We need to think about this motivation for prognostics. All right, many people on the medical side, you've heard of prognostics. It's the prediction of your remaining life. If you tragically have cancer, somebody's going to give you a life estimate. Could be 6 months, could be 2 years, whatever it is. We try and do the same thing for engineering systems. And there is an increasing need to manage legacy systems. That's everything from bridges on the Interstate 95 back on the East Coast, where pieces have fallen off and nearly landed on fishermen before the DOT discovered there were problems. We do periodic inspections. The frequency of inspection and technology needs to be reviewed. You've got to understand the degradation mechanisms. We want to move to condition-based maintenance. Operation and maintenance costs are significant. Significantly for things like wind turbines. That picture, the flames, is the San Bruno incident where a pipeline went up in a residential subdivision. 40 houses were incinerated and about 50 people significantly burned, and I believe it was about 10 finally died. That has actually got the attention of congressmen. If you have an explosion in your district, you really want to show you're doing something. PG&E are, I'm told, going to have to spend several billion dollars addressing some of just the gas facilities in their region. So big technology has issues. Oh, and that deep sea drilling floating platform that's almost a non-floating platform is a Petrobras one. that was having a bad day and was going to keel over. So big technology, big issues. Structural health monitoring has become routine, potentially for various sorts of systems. There's an example up in Delaware. University of Delaware has been looking at putting things onto a nice bridge, a new bridge there. But what do we want to do? And what do we as Christians, caring about creation, caring about sustainability, our goal is to proactively address potential failure, to operate plants to avoid failures, to maintain integrity, operation, and safety. Why do we care about that? Bhopal, the chemical works in India, 3,000 people died when the wrong chemicals got out. If you have a civilian jet have its engine deconstruct, it gives you a bad day. If you have your bridge fail, that clearly gives you a bad day. So what we are trying to do is move simply beyond inspection to more advanced approaches. We want to maintain things at the left-hand side. We need state awareness. We need to maintain the system in proper working order. We need to detect changes early. We no longer wish to run things till it breaks. Many people used to run engineering systems till you got something, went clonk, 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 and you don't run your car now till a wheel falls off. You've got all sorts of computer stuff inside your car. There's going to be a red light. It needs maintenance. The structural health monitoring, the prognostics approaches, the car is just giving you a red light. It doesn't tell you you've only got 50 miles till the engine seizes. So we're trying to do more prediction, and we're trying to do better diagnostics. We really want to give early detection of faults, and then we wish to try and avoid secondary damage, because clearly the Sioux City incident where the DC-10 had the disc come out, the disc itself was a primary event. The plane crash was, the secondary follow-on. We want to avoid those nasty, expensive things. Let's think about a few common components and issues, particularly, again, for energy systems. Most engineering systems in energy could be geothermal. It could be just about anything else. You've got pipes. We've got pressure vessels. We care about cracks, corrosion, erosion. Doesn't matter whether it's geothermal. For wind turbine blades, you've got composite material. Most stuff's got concrete in it. We actually want to know what the concrete is and what the condition is. If you've got a concrete dam, you do not want the concrete dam to fail. When I was in Colorado, one of my former students, we were doing work on Barker Dam, imaging the inside of Barker Dam, which is up above Boulder. You can do those sorts of things. And from the photovoltaic side, again, you've got to look at the semiconductors, the semiconductor materials. So there's a whole family of stuff. If we had a different forum and a different time, I'd happily talk about those. But let's just look at this quick quote. It's not from scripture, but in this transition, we're moving to a new energy economy. I think we can agree, we're trying to move to a new energy economy. And I'm not going to read all of it, but in this transition, the role of NDE is clearly, it's certainly clear to the practitioners, but unappreciated, ignored by most other people. It will not be possible to rely on the accumulated wisdom to predict safety and reliability, and there are new things and new technologies, and yet such knowledge can have a major impact on the cost of new energy systems and their deployment. Okay? That was said by James Kane, Associate Director of DOE Basic Energy Sciences, in 1978. Most of my career mirrors from that point. I got my PhD in 78, and I've been working in this for the 40 years, almost. It's not new news. It, however, has not got absorbed by the technical community, and in terms of the Christian community and others who wish to be environmentally responsible, it hasn't got absorbed by them either. So let's quickly talk a little bit about state of art of monitoring. You can get a wind turbine, you can measure various things. Wind turbines have a bad day. Wind turbines are not totally safe, they are not totally benign, and you can get a 2,000-pound piece of ice that will come off a wind turbine in Iowa in the middle of the winter and has hit a cow, and the cow had a bad day. You've also had a few big pieces of ice that have actually hit trucks. And again, if 1,000 pounds or 2,000 pounds of ice comes off a wind turbine, it can fly for half a mile or more, and it's sort of like the reverse of a wing, and it can fly and give you a bad day. So how do you inspect these things at the moment? And yes, you don't want fireballs coming off them. That sort of gives people bad impressions of benign technology. Well, the top left-hand side, your left-hand side, shows a platform moving up and down the individual blade. However, most companies don't actually do that. Their high technology inspection is the dude on the top on the left-hand side. He's got a telescope and he's trying to look at the blade to inspect it. How much does that inspection cost? About $300. And he can try and look at the leading edges and he can try and take some cameras. These days now you're trying to get a drone to actually stop to fly around and have a look at it. Take some local pictures. There's even some work where now people are trying to get little sensors to put in from a drone. So there's some interesting technology, but blades fail. What do blades consist of? They're pretty cruddy. That's putting it politely. This is glue that's sort of in the middle. You're trying to run the outside that looks like an aerofoil that, using technology that's really no much better than building a plastic boat. These are pieces of real blades, real wind turbines. The one on this side is trailing edge. You can see the glue. You can see the balsa wood. Yes, balsa wood is part of it. And there's a gel coat over the outside. There's lots of various sorts of defects in there, and I'm not going to go into the details of those. But in terms of operations, O&M costs approximately 25% of the levelized cost of per kilowatt hour is operation and maintenance. The wind is free, yes. The cost of running the wind turbine is not. And also you've got to actually take a little guy in a white van to go out to the wind turbine, climb 200 feet, do the inspections, and he then may need to go back to somewhere else to get the part if he finds it's missing. So monitoring and condition-based maintenance has the potential to reduce the overall cost of wind turbines. That has an economic impact, it has a societal impact, because if you can reduce the cost, you no longer have to have subsidies, so it can really help to improve things. You can stick fiber optic sensors, I'm not going to go into this different forum for that, the acoustic emission and ultrasonic sensors. Some numbers very, very quickly. Blade replacement can cost you about $500,000. You have to hire a crane. You have to pull the things up. You have to transport them around. Major repairs can be $50,000. As I said, the inspection's about $250 with the telescope. Condition monitoring system will cost you $20,000 to $30,000, depending whose data you believe. And this was done with one of my former students. He did a study and showed that, and I'm not going to go through all the details of it, but you could get a return on investment, worst case 19 years, most likely case is 3 to 4 years, the best case is a year, because many of the blades out there at the moment don't last the 20 years you'd like them to last. They're going to fail. So for creation care, putting it in the context of this meeting, advanced NDE and structural health monitoring can help you to manage the costs. It can minimize the environmental impact, whether it be the cow getting hit by the piece of ice or the blades having a fiery day. Creation care and good engineering practices and economics can align, and it will help us as we address climate change issues. A couple of acknowledgements. This was done through Iowa State University CNDE, and Jeremy was supported as an IGERT NSF fellow. If you want to know more about NDT, there is. Look at www.ndt-ed.org, the NDT Resource Center. There's 1,000 pages of information there. It is being used by some people who are doing homeschooling because there's good things on acoustics and all sorts of other stuff there. It's everything from high school to university researchers. And as requested, there are a couple of references there for those who wish to learn about such things. So I've probably talked quite long enough, and the chair has stood up and telling me we need to stop. All right, so thank you very much. Yes.
So you talked about how this kind of NDE technology has been talked about in 78 and how it's still not necessarily being used as much as it should be. I'm curious what your perspective is on kind of some of the sources of those challenges. Is it in the technology side and being able to build things that are useful, or is it more in industry and government not necessarily implementing existing technology, and then what you think might be able to be done to help change that?
There is clearly an educational component, and part of today is the educational component, but the people who drove NDE, the thing that resulted in my center, which is an NSF Industry University Cooperative Research Center, has been DARPA, Defense Advanced Projects Agency, Air Force, because people don't want military aircraft and hardware coming out of the air, the nuclear community, because, again, nuclear power plants having a bad day is not really viewed as a good thing. Tragically, we're a bit like ambulance chasers. The people who care are the petrochemical industry, because we've had some refinery issues, we've had some pipeline issues, and congressmen care about that. So the high-tech industries are applying it. It's in codes, it's in standards. The community involved in renewable energy, the more fringy type stuff, the cheaper type stuff, has not really engaged with this community. So the technology is there for the high-tech industry. Although we've been working some, and Jeremy was one of my former students, was working to get involved in the wind industry. The economics in the wind industry is marginal. They can't afford, in many cases, to put $50,000 worth of instrumentation onto a wind turbine. At least that's how they think it is. They don't think they can afford it. Photovoltaics, people have not included enough in the manufacturing processes. Geothermal, it's pipes. It's a chemical plant. It's an energy plant. You're really going to use technology which already exists. So a lot of it is educational, but the codes, the standards, the life extension, the technology is not matured. We are trying to work as much as we can, but the people who really care about this, as I said, are the nuclear, the oil, and the aerospace, because if you lose a plane and the space people, the shuttles, and then SpaceX, when you've seen some things have a bad day, some of our students from the center are now working for SpaceX and they are a sponsor. Those sort of things get attention. Additive manufacturing parts are getting attention because they're high value, high critical for many engineering applications. The sort of others that tend to happen. So it's an economics issue and an education issue. Yeah, sorry.
So how pervasive is just simple video-based visual inspection? I mean, it seemed to me that pipelines, windmills, and so on could benefit from just having permanent visual
photography that prevents
somebody from having to go to the site and inspect things along the way.
The current inspection for a typical bridge is a guy with a flashlight and a mirror on a stick. The current inspection of many wind turbines is somebody with a pair of binoculars.
Right. Can we install cameras? It just seems that video technology is such that...
The problem is resolution. You really need to be up close and personal to a lot of these things to see what's going on. Because if you wait till you can actually see a piece is broken on a bridge, which you can see at a distance, you're in trouble. If you wait until the wind turbine blade starts to significantly deform, you're already in trouble. So you really want to be able to detect things sufficiently early in the life. Optical is clearly part of it, but you need to go on to installed structural health monitoring and get people to be thinking more in that direction.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.